Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Welcome back, and we have to tell you that it is a fool's errand to believe that we are going to get the federal government to behave without using the Constitution. In other words, the party and electing these good conservatives is the way back to restoring our constitutional republic. And folks, we've been doing this for centuries, well over a century. And as a matter of fact, this show is going to dive into how it's our fault, how we dove and began swimming in the pool of politics. And so what we're going to do is we're going to expose you to what I see as a divine design within our government that has never been, that's never, ever been created in not even Moses' time. Now, you got to understand, during Moses' time, during Israel, Moses created, you know, a set of judges and laws and a form of government of judges that was based on a theocracy. It was, you know, based on not the individual rights, but by the guide of the church, or at that point in time, it was a theocracy. So, okay, so the intent wasn't to create a liberal society to allow people to do what they wanted to, because somehow it was I think it became pretty well known by the time Moses came back down with the second set of laws that Israel wasn't ready to be liberal. God's children weren't ready, because they weren't ready to even go into the promised land. It took them 40 years to change their culture. It took them centuries to finally get to a point, even under, you know, eons of slavery and so forth. It took them a long time to be ready to receive, and they still weren't ready to receive Christ. This concept of repentance and forgiveness and taking full accountability for yourself and your actions. And so it was a big paradigm shift going into this new, literally it was a paradigm, going into this new paradigm of living liberally. And what I mean liberally, not like the political liberals we see today. In other words, living in a society where everybody had to become educated and informed and made their own choices and choose what's best for them, that slavery was repugnant in this new society, that every person needed to support themselves. It's kind of like that original commandment that God gave Adam, that man must live by the sweat of his own brow. You know, it didn't take long after Adam for man to create indentured servitude and or slavery and or forms of getting people to sweat for you. And that's what we see today. Now, there's nothing wrong with good businesses and good businesses doing good things. But there is something divine about a country that constrains businesses to make sure that they can only do good things, or more importantly, that they can't do bad things. Don't believe anybody that a business is a private entity. A business must be established by the state, and that state must ensure that that business does not deny or abridge the privileges and immunities that are guaranteed by the Constitution within that business's culture, within that business's operations, and so forth. These businesses cannot deny your privileges and immunities. Why? Because states cannot make or enforce. We covered this. They cannot enforce any law that a business can, or policy or rule that a business makes and how they want to govern themselves. That business must govern itself based on the liberties and the privileges and immunities that are within our Constitution. So, as I say, there's no sign that our government is going to relinquish their tyranny. So it's now or never, folks. Either we wake up, either we overcome this, or we're going to rue the day because we've basically failed to act. We have a birthright. We have a responsibility to our posterity because we have the knowledge. You know, it really came, believe it or not, we're in this position, we have this opportunity because of the age of information, because of the age of the internet. This technology, this release of technology, has truly been a blessing from our Creator. Anyway, what we do want to do is we want to, you know, dive into some very interesting content that is going to help you understand, you know, this design, and actually design, you know, can help you understand how we got here as well. But you must know that the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions of what we need to do and how to get back to our constitutional framework and getting our government operating within the framework, strictly within the framework. So with that, one of the things I mentioned before, and I truly believe, so I want to do a re-rant on this abridging of politicians' speech. I believe we need to go a little further than that, because I believe when a politician in a formal capacity, such as Al Gore, when Al Gore got up in front of people and started telling the people that are, you know, we're going to be decimated by this climate change and all this other crap, that Al Gore was literally fear-mongering and using demagoguery and so forth in trying to create an outcome. And I believe that is a crime. As a matter of fact, because if he can't articulate and specify on this particular day this is going to happen, then you better shut up. If you don't know precisely what is going to happen, don't speak like you're the authority. And so we have to actually start going after, because we need to start silencing the demagoguery. The demagoguery is what gets people going. As Aristotle points out, that it's demagoguery, how leaders rise to power, because people quickly surrender to that. But if we start getting educated and become impervious to demagoguery and say, hey, this really sounds like like hyperbole, and we believe that what you're trying to use is fear-mongering, and we're not going to allow that, and we're basically shutting you down. And we need to find these people, and we need to ban them from public service. The last thing we need are demagogues in public service, folks. We need to make sure that they can't get back into office, because they are very dangerous people. And in light of that, here's the re-rant, though. I believe we need to also look at influencers in society. I don't think we need to create laws regarding music and those types of things. If you want to make it a part of your art, that's fine. But when you want to start standing up and preaching your political philosophies and start using demagoguery and so forth, then I believe you need to be held accountable for that, especially when you start making these assumptions that we're all going to die, or that this is going to happen or that's going to happen. And I believe that there needs to be some kind of a protection, because bottom line, folks, they don't know what they're talking about. They're blowing it out their backside. And we need to start waking up. We need to start becoming independent and not allowing people to do our thinking for us. You know, if you want your salvation, go to your church. But we should not be thinking that these people can give us salvation because, oh, look, I mean, look how rich they are. Look how well-known they are. Look how they say the things that I want to hear. Anyway, I will leave that done. done with and put in the past. We'll bring it up down the road, but we need to put these things on the table so that we can have honest conversations. You can't ever get rid of the elephant in the room until you start addressing it. That's why all of this is so important. That's literally what we're trying to do with this show. We're trying to put it all on the table for you, and we're using all the source documents to prove what belongs on that table. And it's a big table and it's very crowded. So I want to get back to something that I talked about before. So everything that I kind of had been telling you about this immune system, about the parties and this corruption and so forth for today's content, this all goes in line with this question I've had for you. What kind of president does America really deserve, and what kind of president do we really need? I mean, we deserve a Hitler, and we've got one. We've got a thug in the White House, and he is doing what he wants to do to inflict upon us because we have been duped and stupid enough to believe in these concepts that we have a democracy, that they have all the opportunity and power and authority to inflict any type of harm to us that they want. And I am telling you that that is not within the framework of our Constitution. So we're getting what we deserve, if you understand what I'm saying. But we can actually change that. And as a matter of fact, we can easily go down this path of getting the president that we really need. But we have to start talking again. It's all about that elephant in the room. Or maybe some of you would prefer to talk about the donkey in the room. But it's a little bit more than that. Now, when we come back, we'll be diving into the ratcheting of tyranny. We'll be right back.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's just dive forward into the ratcheting of tyranny. See, folks, tyranny could not get by Americans unless the two parties supported it. So, in other words, the ratcheting of tyranny required two-party support, because after Washington left office, we actually created a two-party system. And so we'll kind of go into the migration of this, because if you understand, we actually had the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists before the Constitution. But Washington wasn't affiliated with the Federalist or the Anti-Federalist. And so under his administration, it was kind of free realm, or, you know, an open, you know, season, or that's still not a good way. Not I'm looking metaphorically to say it was America had not chosen hardcore what type of government they wanted. Unfortunately, instead of accepting the Constitution as it stood, they felt that they needed to gravitate towards a collective overview or paradigm of their government via a party. And so Washington warned us about parties and how they become factions and how they become very destructive. People didn't listen. And even all the framers knew this. All of the framers knew this. Especially the key framers. They warned us about party affiliation. Well, what did Madison was one of them. Jefferson was another. They actually made fun of the party system. However, they actually created a party because the dominant party was so, they in their eyes, was so destructive, they had to do something. So during Washington's reign, during his two terms of presidency, we had the Anti-Federalists and the Federalists. And what ended up happening was the Anti-Federalists became Federalists. I want you to understand this. The Anti-Federalists weren't, you know, they weren't little government folks. As a matter of fact, the position the Anti-Federalists had was they wanted big government for their states, and they wanted to keep the central government limited and constrained because they wanted all the power for themselves. In other words, they were power mongers, and so they seized, or they did everything they could to thwart the ratification of the Constitution so that they could retain their cabals. Now, after the Constitution got ratified, well, folks, you know, the dam's broke, the river's flowing, and we're all going downriver. And so the Anti-Federalists jumped into this new national government, and they became big government Federalists. So in other words, the Federalists, this concept of a limited government federalism, or I should not say, I don't want to use the word federalism because that actually connotates a federation, but this limited government concept of the Federalist actually got co-opted and overtaken by the big government Anti-Federalists when they came into the Federalist Party. So by the time John Adams took office, the Federalists were literally the old Anti-Federalists, and they were a big government Federalist. So the opposition, obviously, the little government people in the Federalists said, well, we're not a part of this. We don't want you to vote for us. They had to differentiate themselves. And so Madison and Jefferson created a differentiating party called the Republican Party. Do not believe that it was the Democratic, Wikipedia and all of these, you know, progressive institutions want you to believe that they called that party the Democratic Republican Party. That's not the case. That is a fabrication, and that is that is a deliberate, I'll just say, deception in getting people to think, oh, well, Democratic. No, they were very specific. It was one point in time when somebody asked Jefferson to kind of explain this Republican Party, because it's, you know, it seemed like it was all about representation. He goes, well, representation through democracy. And that was where they basically used a little artistic license to say, oh, it's a Democratic Republican Party. But that only ran, because I have no evidence anywhere in any of the documents where they referred to the party with a Democratic spin. None. I do have documented evidence from Madison and even Jefferson where they referred to their parties as Republican. Prove me wrong. And so when we look at the migration of the parties, the the Republicans became so dominant that the Federalists, the anti-Federalist Federalists, started going into the Republican Party. And they started actually converting the Republican Party towards a big government party. And you'll notice that towards the very end of the Republican Party, it actually had big government actions where, you know, because the Federalists actually started becoming Republicans. And they basically started commingling big government within the only party. Because, so folks, the fact is, if you have a party and that party is not focused and centered on the Constitution, your party can all of a sudden create agendas. And we see under Monroe's administration and John Quincy Adams where the government started migrating towards big government. And we're going to get into that in more detail, but I want to just talk about this migration of parties. So in the late 1820s is when the Democratic Party was created by Jackson and Van Buren. And that quickly became a, you know, an exodus from the Republican Party towards this big government Democratic Party. And the big government Democratic Party, even though Jackson did some things that were right, I mean, he did some absolute atrocious things. He killed, what, tens of thousands of Indians, or at least thousands of Indians, on the Tier of Trails. So as the Democratic Party all of a sudden started dominating, the Republicans said, hey, well, we need to change. So they went off and made the big mistake of change. And they created the Whig Party, and they kind of lost their brand, but they were still a, and I don't want to say they were a limited government, because the Whig Party actually started becoming a big government over time in competing, because it seemed like the people of America wanted a little bit bigger government. They wanted government to be able to do a little bit more for them, just a little bit. That's all we ask. And as they did that little bit for them, they violated the Constitution. And each step as government grew, instead of following the constitutional process, they violated the Constitution. They used consensus and compromise to create all of this unconstitutional government. Well, by the time the Democratic Party and when Lincoln created the Republican Party, it was not based upon Madison and Jefferson's platform. It was based on a big government platform. The government was going to have all of these powers. Lincoln, the only thing he was good at was basically keeping the Union together. And the way he did it wasn't good. He did it wrong. But nevertheless, Lincoln created the big government Republican Party. Now, or at least in his administration, he did that. And so here's the interesting thing. When Lincoln died and Andrew Johnson started, you know, reigning as president, we actually had at that point in time, this little bit of span of time, 4 years or so, from 1866 to 1770, 1771, and actually, I'll pull up the color-coded Constitution just so that we can kind of cover this real quick, because when you look at the 15th Amendment, as it was submitted, let me see here, the 15th Amendment was submitted on 1869. So yeah, it was about 1870 when the last of the limited government Republicans, today, folks, they call these limited government Republicans radical Republicans, because they were going against the grain of the prevailing thought of government. The government needed more power and more energy. And it was a constant snowball effect of growing and growing and growing. But these radical Republicans actually created limitations against government by the 14th Amendment, and then even stepped further into, you know, the plate and basically making sure that blacks could not be denied their right to vote. because the 14th Amendment went far enough to basically ensure that blacks were U.S. citizens and had the privileges as a U.S. citizen to vote and everything else, and they created this penalty. But the state said, you know what, we're willing to take the penalty just to basically keep blacks from voting. And that's when they quickly responded with the right for blacks to vote in 1870 or 1869, which was ratified in a year. Folks, I'm here to tell you, when you really look at what the tone of the radical Republicans, people embrace these concepts. The people, the parties. I mean, I don't think people really understood what the politicians of these parties were really doing. I don't think that there was a grassroots movement. As a matter of fact, I will tell you that I believe the average American was not a part of the party. They only voted via the party based on what they heard and what they thought they liked. In other words, they started swimming in the parties, and instead of actually being a part of the party and holding it accountable, they allowed the parties to swim in bad directions into bad waters. We'll be right back after these two promos. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so as we kind of cover this migration in politics, we basically galvanized a two-party system right after the Civil War. And so what I want you to understand is that they created a two-party system and we bowed to it. The people of America just allowed the political energies because they were diametrically opposed. Even though there were these outlier parties that were trying to, you know, get traction and say, we need to do this, we need to do this. Well, the fact is, folks, that we focused on conservative and progressive. And the real progressive era came at the end of the 1800s. Now, progressivism actually started rearing its head in America very early at the beginning of the 1800s with labor unions and so forth. The concept of collectivized labor and collectivism actually started showing up in America in the early 1800s. But politically, it wasn't necessarily embraced until the late 1800s. As a matter of fact, the majority of the people that were in the Pacific Northwest that were involved in founding those governments, Washington State, a lot of the people that created this government for Washington State were socialists. And that was in the late 1800s, 1880s, right? So socialism actually became, and so here's the problem, folks. I'm just going to tell you that they had no authority to allow the parties to go down this path. But the party started doing this, and the people didn't know. The people were ignorant. More importantly, the state legislatures did not do their job. They, too, got sucked into the party influencers, and they, next thing you know, they're in the middle of the stream just shooting down 80 miles an hour down this, you know, this slough, heading into this massive, huge river that there was just no navigating to get out, or at least it seemed inevitable that America was trapped by the party system, period. So that's the party system as it migrated, because today the final migration has been towards conservatism or communism. It's the two C's. They're both two sides of the same coin. You've heard me say this before, and you've heard other people say this as well. I'm now going to prove to you that they are two sides of the same coin. And I'll do this because there are correlations to things that were done by a Republican president and Republican policies where down the road, it was Democrats or communists that exploited them. Now, so let me just start off with big government actions and big government's manipulation, the concept of big government in America. The father of big government in America was Alexander Hamilton. The concept of allowing government to grow based on implied powers and instead of staying within the strict confines of the Constitution was Alexander Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton, prior to the ratification of the Constitution, was strict, compact, you got to abide by this, states need to create barriers, and as soon as it was ratified, he began attacking that. He began attacking that theory and literally started creating implied powers, which is why, my friends, when you look at the ratification debates and what Hamilton said during the ratification debates, Federalist Papers were a little bit different. He was very, I'll just say, bold and aggressive in the Federalist Papers, where he was theoretical in the ratification debates. Why? Because he didn't want to be held to any legal comments or discourse defining the Constitution. So he was very mild as he defined the Constitution, and he only did so knowing in the back of his mind that he was going to have to exploit and actually create implications that countered how the Constitution was being defined. So the first thing he did was he created the Assumptions Act. And the Assumptions Act was where the federal government assumed the debts for all the states. It didn't have the authority to do that. And Madison was right. And it didn't have the authority. Everything it basically based on, this banking and everything else from the very beginning of the Assumption Act. And even though Madison was, you know, I'll just say, co-opted or coerced by Madison or by Jefferson and Hamilton to allow this to go forward, he was coerced, it didn't make it legitimate. Madison's points were very clear and salient. And so this is why the states, as the states actually go through the definitizing of the Constitution, as they get ready to go into republic review, in other words, the auditing and the purification of our government, they'll be able to go back and look at these acts and say, you know, that act right there was going through the debates of the Assumption Act, they will be able to clearly say the federal government assumed a power it did not have, and therefore the federal government was never granted the power of banks. As I've talked about this, and I covered this several times, the word bank was never brought up in the Federalist, or not the Federalist, the ratification debates, because it was not envisioned that the federal government had any power to create a bank. That's why they didn't even mention banks. The Alien and Seditions Act. The Alien Sedition Acts was the next step for Hamilton to be able to start creating controls in America under the Adams administration. And believe it or not, folks, the Adams administration, John Adams, was I'll just say he didn't like Hamilton, but Hamilton was so smart that he couldn't argue against what Hamilton was suggesting, and he did most everything that Hamilton wanted him to do. These Alien Sedition Acts was a big step in that direction. The next part was, and John Adams, the next really big thing that he did was the Midnight Judges. So anyway, and I don't want to grind this axe on Hamilton. He got the end he deserved. That being said, the Alien Sedition Acts was another big government reach, and they were undone by the Republicans. The Republicans took office, and so that was 1798, I'm sorry. And then the Republicans took office, and the Republicans actually were, under the Jefferson and Madison administrations, really maintained this limited government paradigm. Now, James Monroe, who actually voted for the ratification of the Constitution, guess what? He was actually an anti-federalist. And so he had a lot of friends, even though Madison and Jefferson were very close friends of his, he was still closely associated to the cabals and the big government folks. So under his administration, it can't be a big surprise that there was a change within the Republican Party to a big government Republican Party, kind of. I mean, in some ways, they did, because the Missouri Compromise was a big government step. And so as they started moving forward from that, the Democratic Party rose up and they wanted to go further. They wanted to actually start galvanizing slavery even more than what the Republicans were willing to do, because it was Van Buren and the Democrats in the Senate that created the gag order, and I told you this before, on slavery. And so when Jackson and the Democrats took over, the little government Republicans didn't know where to go, and they created a Whig Party, because it seemed like the Democrats annihilated the Republicans. So the Whigs became this opposition, but I'm here to tell you folks, it was an opposition of big government. It wasn't an opposition of limited government versus big government. In other words, it was big government for good conservative things, not for, seeking more and more power, because the big government under Adams, John Adams, was getting involved in helping and stimulating the railroad industry, because he saw the railroad industry as being, something very vital as to growing America and helping us reach farther to the West Coast. So, as we started looking at this great new form of transportation, steam engines and railroad and so forth, we started seeing almost a unilateral shift in all of the parties to start accepting big government policies. Guess what? The people weren't on board with this. The fact of the matter is, at this point in time, the parties were being driven by politicians. And the fact of the matter is, the parties today are still being driven. But the parties, by design, are grassroots. They're supposed to be from the bottom up. And the problem is, folks, you have never seized control of your party to demand it be focused on the Constitution. Instead, you, as soon as you get to the power, or that mantle of power involved at the party level at your county, you get sucked into, it'd be nice for me as a king for the day to do good things with power that I don't have the power to do. Instead of doing the right thing to say, I don't have the power, we can't be doing it. But the first thing, at the very first opportunity that somebody sits at that mantle of power, their first thing that they do is they jump into that pool, that dark, lurky pool of pestilence and so forth, swamp creatures, and they start assuming unconstitutional powers. But they do it for noble reasons and noble causes. and this has been our death and destruction. We'll be right back, and we're actually going to go through the impact of the disparate parties moving forward. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so we may not be able to get into everything in this Feedback Friday, so we'll do it next week because there's a lot to cover. And so what I want to do is I really want to show you how the party system was not done by the people. The party system in America was done by influencers, and it was a top-down and contrary to way a true and pure party is supposed to operate. And so the concept is that at the local level, you're supposed to be driving what you believe is best. And folks, because we were illiterate in America, not understanding the compact, not understanding the Constitution and what it meant, well, we allowed the party to define itself. And so as it went through from the Republican Party into the, you know, the Democratic and the anti-Jackson Party into the Whig Party, you know, you notice that there was this concept of abandoning one party and picking up a new one, and in other words, rebranding oneself. Well, so something happened in America later on after the Democrats had had this long time run as this, you know, opposition to the Republicans, because after the Civil War, that's all we had. There was no more there were third parties, but there was no opportunity for the abandonment of a party. Why was that? Because the two parties basically started working together to dominate so that they would never lose their control. This is when they took over the Electoral College, and this is where they started making, you know, concessions. So I'm just letting you know, the party actually started making decisions that started influencing legislators in Congress to let them do what they wanted them to do to serve the party. This is when the party form of government was created. We really don't have, even though there's kind of a smack to a Republican form of government, there's equally a smack towards a democracy, as equally a smack towards a party form of government. All this being said, folks, as they started moving forward, because I told you John Quincy Adams was favoring the railroads, but he didn't necessarily get heavily invested. It wasn't until the Democrats in 1831 provided assistance to the railroad, provided giving them land that they didn't have, so that they would own that. And then all of a sudden, when states were sovereign and these railroads were coming through here, supposedly these were independent companies. The federal government had no authority to be working with independent companies. Nowhere in the Constitution do they have any ability to regulate companies at all or corporations. Prove me wrong. And you'll know, and anybody that's been listening to this knows I'm right. So bottom line, as they started doing this, well, this was a great injection of growing, which is why the Democrats kind of had this little domination for a couple of years there. Then all of a sudden things flipped, things changed, and the Whigs took over. And so as America started growing, this big government Whig party started seizing control over land as well, just like the Democrats. And so what did the Whigs do that was a huge usurpation? And by the way, folks, this was the first step. This was the first whack, the true, damage to the Constitution. It was an egregious violation when the Whigs created the Department of Home. This is where the federal government came along and started controlling state land that they had no authority to create. And so the Home Department was created in 1849, and you know it today by its name of the Department of Interior. And so as they created this Home Department, it was at the time when all of this manipulation and management of the federal government in the territories was supposed to be sunsetting. Why? Because all of the land that, was going from the East Coast to the West Coast was already pretty much formed. There were two little teeny strips, I think, in Texas or New Mexico and Arizona. Everything else was done. The contiguous United States had been formed, and the plans and the basic designs of territorial governments were pretty much underway, to where the Oregon Territory needed to be broken up a little bit more. But bottom line, it was done. There was no need to grow and to galvanize this Home Department, other than the fact that there had been people working in the Home Department for years, and they felt that they were entitled to their jobs and entitled to a retirement, a pension, a government pension, something that the federal government, could do as a congressional body, but creating a permanent body and creating a permanent control over land, over state land, were both unconstitutional. So bottom line, as they created this and people that started working in the Department of Home, the Department of Interior, they were absolutely, and by creating laws, and they were already doing this in 1820, when they created the Missouri Compromise, they had no authority to do what they were doing. So bottom line, the first real big step was the Department of Home. And that was done by the conservatives, or I should say, the Republicans or the Whigs. In 1889, the Republicans were the ones that supported welfare to the farmers and created the Department of Agriculture. And started, they became so involved, because we were actually providing farmer aid and, helping, manipulate and manage the agricultural market space, that the federal government just galvanized that by the Republican Party or the Republicans in control of government creating the Department of Agriculture. Then later on, the Republicans, who were also in control still, started regulating businesses, and this is when Teddy Roosevelt created his Trust Busters, and this was in 1904. So this is where they started actually going after and telling, businesses they're too big to, for them to allow them to succeed. We're not going to let you become a monopoly. Or they started going after monopolies, and they started creating anti-monopoly laws. Well, folks, the federal government has no authority to do that. But bottom line, we thought, that, oh, well, that's good, because what was really happening, because government was already getting involved in companies and choosing one company over another. And as a successful company like Alcoa, we started going down the path of not having any government assistance. It put itself on the, you know, the in the sights for the government to actually say, we got to target these guys because they're not bowing to us. They're successful without our help. How dare they be successful without us? And so they went after and shut down Alcoa. And still, Alcoa to this day is still a successful aluminum company and a primary provider in aluminum because they were just that good in doing what they were doing, and they weren't profit mongers as most people would think a monopoly would be. But most a pure monopoly without government influence is 9 times out of 10 a good thing. Believe it or not, it's contrary to what you've been taught, because you've been taught that government needs to control everything. We can't trust anything unless government is involved. It's the same thing with our religion. We can't trust anything unless government is involved in our religion. Government's involved in all of these things, folks. So what are you going to do? Are you really going to continue to believe that government has to be involved in all these things for it to be good? No. So we have to start changing our paradigm. So in 1908, the federal government then took another step, and this was again the progressive side of the Republican Party, because it was again the Republican Party that gave us the federal assumption of crime and criminal law enforcement and started moving towards prohibition, because we already know that the Prohibition Act, what was that, 19-something, you know, actually made it illegal for the manufacturing, and this became big business enforcing these little laws, because people, alcohol was a staple in America, and to make America dry, the only way we could do that was through education and changing our culture. But instead, they wanted to go after the stick mentality instead of the carrot. Nevertheless, as at that point in time, Teddy Roosevelt conceded that the progressives weren't being progressive enough, that the big government motto wasn't big enough. So Teddy Roosevelt competed for presidency again with Taft to ensure that Wilson would be elected, and Wilson was elected with a minority of the popular vote, just like Clinton was. And so Wilson was the one that gave us the assumption of unlimited spending and the temporary federal income tax of 1913. And what I mean by that, he actually ran a campaign that America could do much more, but we need to be able to pass this income tax so that we can just spend our way up to a level of posterity or prosperity, and then we will, you know, get rid of this income tax. Ah. But we got to do it constitutionally, so we're going to make this amendment. You know how hard it was to get rid of that amendment? And I can tell you right now, it'll be very easy to get rid of that amendment if we actually reel in spending. We've got a long way to go. So when we come back, I will talk a little bit more about the income tax and what Wilson did in his campaign and how he duped America. He outright lied to America, folks. And this is just to show you that the parties are the problem, and there's a way to fix this in our next Feedback Friday. I'm J.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.